At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2 times the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
This is Hidden Killers Year in Review, a look back at the biggest stories of 2025. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Lori Daybell. We are, at least as of this recording, the trial is scheduled. It is scheduled for roughly, if you're watching this right now, depending if you're getting this in advance, about a week. Or if you're watching it as it airs, less than a week before jury selection begins in the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell in Arizona. We're going to go through her last court hearing here today on the program and kind of break it down, kind of go through and show you a little, another preview. This is Lori beyond what the Keith Morrison interview was on Dateline. This is new material. Fresh new music for your work day, if you will.
New music, number one for today's crazy people. True crime today.
And the Hidden Killers podcast.
New crazy. Crazy, 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 crazy.
Yeah, that's, you know. So that's what we're going to go through because, yeah, it's completely nuts. But it'll give you a little better idea of how well prepped she is for her upcoming trial. Or not.
Right.
And may make you, I don't know. Here's the deal. We have 2 big trials that are supposedly going to start in about a week. I don't know if either of them are going to start in a week. As of this recording. Again, at the time you're hearing this, it may already be pushed back. Because I think the Karen Reed case has a lot of issues, and I think this case has a lot of competency issues but they seem ready to let her go and at least put her out there on the stage and let her crash and burn if that's what's going to happen. So here we go, Stacey. Let's jump into the Lori Daybell trial. I'm going to put my glasses on so I can see these timestamps because I'm blind now. 40 is where we're going to start this. We're going to pretty much play this through. I mean, I'm going to fast forward any parts that are kind of slower. But this part going forward is where we start to get to some significance here in the hearing. So buckle up, Buttercup, because this is Lori Vallow in her rawest form. Let's take a look.
All right. Let's take a look here. Let me ask the state, you have 21 witnesses listed. I need to look at the defense witnesses that were listed. And we're after jury selection. I recognize jury selection could take longer than the initial week that I've set forth, but from April 7th to May 15th, the current screening, that is 20 full days of trial and 2 half days, so essentially 21 days of trial. do you really think we need to screen that far out? I know you're being overly cautious.
I think, especially given that I'm not positive we'll pick a jury in that first week, I think we should, Your Honor.
All right. Defense, have any comment on how we're screened through May 15th?
I think it's plenty of time, Your Honor, myself.
Now, here's the deal. They're trying. There's a huge witness list, and they have to figure out and go through this thing. And then also deem if these witnesses are even admissible into court. So that's what they're talking about right now, because you can't just have random people coming up as witnesses, especially if your defendant is also her an attorney and she's not mentally stable. You might get interesting folks. You might get like the Domino's pizza driver that has nothing to do with this, that, you know, she ordered a pizza from when she was 17, because somehow, you know, she had a spiritual connection. So you're going to get crazy shit like that. So that's where they need to screen this. And the thing is, you're going to have to figure out where these people are, how to get in contact with anybody that you're listing as a potential witness, notify them that they're going to be called as a potential witness so they can prepare, be prepared to come into court if they're summoned to do so. And the court also has to determine again, are they something that needs to be in here? Does the court approve them as being representative of something in your case that this would be significant to? If it relates, basically, to put it as lightly as you can. And that's what they're concerned with Lori. So know that going into this next section of what we're about to listen to if you're listening on the podcast, if you're watching us on YouTube. And let me just give the reminder right now, while we're all here together in a big circle holding hands, watching and waiting for Lori Daybell to say more crazy stuff, press subscribe. If you're new to the show, if you're new to the podcast, press subscribe wherever it is you're downloading so you don't miss any of our content. We put out tons of stuff every single week. It's an insane amount, really. I dream about this stuff at night, and I need to find a way not to.
Do we have a popcorn sponsor?
We should.
I mean, I realize that people are deceased, and I'm not making light of that in any way. I'm making light of her, and that's where the popcorn suggestion comes from. I have popcorn next to me.
I have a popcorn machine right beyond this wall. It's in the room right across from me, which is a theater. And it's one of the old fashioned popcorn, you know, deals. And I really, when this gets going, because I think there's going to be some days during the Lori Vallow trial that we're going to go live and actually run the trial with live commentary on this. I'm going to make popcorn those days.
I think we need to get a popcorn sponsor too. I just do, because this, I think, and we've made this prediction before, that we think this trial is going to go quickly because it's just going to circle the drain so fast.
Yeah.
With her being her own attorney. And again, not making light of the fact that this is about deceased people.
This is horrible. And but I mean,
craziness, but taking that part of it out and just looking at how bonkers she is.
Yeah,
we need snacks.
All you can do is laugh at this point. I mean, even the family members, even Colby, who's the brother of the deceased children, he's like, all you can do is laugh because it's so absurd.
I mean, it's just so painful.
It is utterly, utterly absurd. No one's trying to make light of any of this. We're just trying to put some levity into a very dark situation while reporting the news to you on it. And that's, I don't know. I think that's what kind of makes us a little different over here, is it's not just straight dark. I mean, it is dark.
No, we can't.
But we got to add a little levity. And I really appreciate you guys. I've seen a lot of comments on YouTube of just, hey, thanks for making me laugh on really dark, horrible things. Like, you're welcome. I'm glad we can do that.
And here's an interesting part that I just want to throw in, Tony. I hope that's okay.
Yeah.
We call this Murder in the Morning. And the reason that I think that you created this specific podcast is because we both come from morning show radio.
Yeah.
That's kind of our trademark. It's for sure my trademark. I spent 18 years in morning radio. So I'm used to this back and forth banter, and you've, we've got to find the funny because that's how you entertain people on your way to work.
I mean, that's
so now we just have a different topic that we're leaning on, which is
it's like I've
literally
always said,
murder.
It's a morning show that talks about murder, and you know, we add some levity to it, and that's really kind of what we made. And I really appreciate all the positive feedback everybody's been giving us out there on YouTube. We greatly appreciate that support. Please let your friends know that we exist too. Cause you know, it's not, you know, the pet of the week and all that stupid stuff. No one cares about the pet of the week. I'm sorry. Just no one gives a shit. That's where you press a button. You go to something else, you know, like it is.
Tony,
you knew it back in the day. It's nobody cares.
I will fight you to the death.
Nobody cares.
Yes.
Well, especially in radio where you can't see the damn pet. Look, if it was on camera, the TV pet of the week makes sense because people like looking at the pet of the week. On the radio, no one cares.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying because I'm like, wow, what happened to you?
It was just one of those things where you're like, I can't see this animal. Although it's funny because you actually have given me one of my pets on live radio.
Yes, I did. That's how you got one of your pets, is through me.
Scruffles the cat. Who lived a very, like 18 years or so. Long life.
That would be my influence.
Yep.
Just going to say that.
So, yeah, there you go. All right, let's watch some of this Lori Vallow Daybell and continue on with the warning that I gave you of what you're about to be seeing. He's got our hands cuffed still.
All right, let's deal with a couple things first. I've received the notice of compliance. That was when the defendant requested the Gilbert video. Is that apply to the second case or this case?
Your Honor, it's an incident that occurred in January. It's not really, it was disclosed because it is mentioned in the DR. The defense had filed a motion for the state to disclose that, and then had brought up again on the 11th that the state had not disclosed it, that there was some YouTube video of that. I have looked for said YouTube video. I have gone through the police report. I don't know what video she's discussing, but we're not aware of any video that has been
YouTube video.
So I'm just providing notice that disclosure is complete as to that police report that is peripherally relevant.
All right. Any comment on that?
Yes, Your Honor. For clarity, is the state proposing that there is no video or that they don't have to give it to me because it's not attached to that DR number?
I think what she said was she's not aware of what video you referenced. So as far as her knowledge, she doesn't have it and doesn't know about it.
So I should go directly to Gilbert Police Department to get it?
Well, last time you were in court, you said your investigator or someone told you about it.
A mitigator. Showed it to me.
If they have that link, why don't they just send it to the state? And that may help the state determine if that's something they've already disclosed.
I will tell you why they won't, because that is my former team, and they will not do anything to help my investigator, my paralegal. They won't give us any information that they found. They won't talk to us at all because apparently there was a conflict. So they will not help us. They will not send us anything. They will not email us anything. They will not answer anything that we ask them to. So that has been the response from my former defense team. That's where we are.
All right. Do you know, and maybe your advisory councils can speak to this, did they turn over a file to you, or did you have to start from scratch?
No. From what I understand, all they turned over was the 22 terabyte hard drive, and that is it. They didn't turn down any notes, any work product, nothing that they had done to that point. And they continue to stand by that today, even though a lot of that information I gave to them, they would not give it back to me.
All right. I'm going to make an order, and it'll be in the minute entry that they turn over a copy of their entire file, including any mitigation information that was gathered to the advisory council. That makes Hicks, you look like you want to say something.
Yeah, and here we go.
I don't know.
You already have it. Oh, did you see this? This is great. Her advisory council literally gets up out of her chair and then has to go do a sidebar with the judge. And the whole time that Lori was speaking there, by the way, if you're listening to this, she was looking like, what the hell is wrong with you?
It looks like,
oh my God, what is she doing right now? What is she saying? Like, none of this was planned. And her advisory council can't make decisions, but they can help kind of guide her a bit. And now she's back.
So I'll do a more detailed order about.
I'd love to hear that sidebar.
A copy of their entire file to advisory council when they withdrew.
So the judge is trying to figure out where to go next here. At first, I thought the advisory council actually walked out because she looked so like, I'm done.
Like. Yep.
At first, I thought she like just dropped the mic and left.
I can't do this. This is enough.
This is good. I'm done. There's nothing more I can do on this. God, I do not envy her, but she'll have a great book deal at the end, I'm sure. She could probably quit law and just take the earnings off of the book of what I learned from Lori Vallow Daybell. Although I do wonder if that's still covered by like attorney-client privilege after the fact, being an advisor to this, or if that all kind of goes out the... I don't know, because she's state-appointed. I don't know what the answer to that is. I'm going to have to ask Bob that. Oh, she's up again. She's up again. She's got to go do a sidebar to the judge because she can't say this stuff out loud because she knows it's going to affect Lori.
She's getting her steps in today. I hope she's got some sort of tracker on her wrist.
Well, and here's what my other favorite part of this is. Lori is sitting there laughing and ucking up with her investigator, quote unquote, who they got seated there early on. And we didn't even show that part because it was just, can my investigator come sit next to me? And like, yeah, pull up a chair. Can you imagine being Lori Vallow's investigator?
No.
I mean, what are you investigating? What are you looking up? I mean, what are you? I mean, other than like, and I'm curious, is the investigator state appointed? Is there budget for this that she was given by the state for an investigator? And so it's kind of like a cattle call you throw out there of like, hey, we're looking for this type of person. I mean, normally you don't do a cattle call. If you had a real attorney, they'd have real investigators that would be like, here's who we go to for all these right, sort of so jobs. Let's take a listen to the judge.
Read the defendant's disclosures that were filed March 6th and March 12th, as well as the state's motion to preclude. Let me start. Have you received any response from the defense, anyone from the defense team since you filed this on March 16th?
Your Honor, last night at 10:30 or so, defendant's investigator sent over a list of the addresses of the witnesses. I did speak with him this morning. I still am unclear if defense will be setting up those interviews or if they will be providing phone numbers to the state to set them up ourselves. As for the expert, again, last night at like 10:30 at night, defense investigator emailed the state and indicated that the defense expert would need to or wanted to obtain the physical laptops and cell phones that the police had impounded so that he could then review them, do his own sobriety or extractions. So obviously the expert hasn't even begun work, let alone they've also requested all impounded items from law enforcement. I'm unclear if they're asking for ones that were impounded in Idaho as part of their investigation or just the ones here. The statements from the investigator appears to be all of them, which would mean the state would have to request Idaho to send those to the investigator.
That's the prosecution speaking, and they're requesting these sort of things that if you're preparing for trial, you should have requested half a year ago?
I was going to say a while ago.
Because your trial is literally in a week. And you are asking for all, and then and have an investigator do these extractions. And you can't physically do it.
No.
It's not possible. But in Lori Vallow's magical thinking, oh, totally possible. And God knows what the, I'm not trying to brag on this investigator. He's just doing his job. Like, oh, well, this is what she wants. And, you know, that's the client. As absurd as all these requests sound, it is what it is. And it's insanely absurd. And this next area we're going to listen to, the judge is really going to point out how absurd all this is, how the timing is virtually impossible. Really going above and beyond to try and spell it out to Lori Vallow Daybell. Do you want more time? Like almost offering it up on a platter. Like, okay, you know, giving her the grace of, you're your own attorney. You don't know these things, I guess, or you just didn't pay attention or whatever. And literally offering her more time. And she's like, no, let's keep going ahead. Anyway, take a listen. This is how this plays out. It's very entertaining.
So again, given all of those issues, I don't see how that it would be possible for the state to provide that to the expert prior to this trial beginning, let alone to get a report or an opinion prior to this trial beginning.
All right, let's set aside Dworkin for the time being. So you're, well, let me ask the investigator. What's your name, sir?
Jeff.
Jeff what?
White.
Okay, Mr. White, are you going to be setting up interviews for the state to interview whatever potential witnesses the defendants noticed?
I'm trying to verify, excuse me, sir. I'm trying to verify the phone numbers to be correct. I do have a few of them, but some of them I'm trying to make sure that these are the correct numbers.
Okay.
I did the searches for them, and I have to apologize. I left yesterday, and for some odd reason, my email just did not go through. So,
Your Honor, my understanding is that the state has interviewed every single person on my witness list previously. That's where I got the people from the interviews that they had from the state previously. So I understand that they're allowed to do another interview of them, but they have interviews of every single person that is on my list, with the exception of one.
Which is who?
Which is Nate Eaton.
Okay. When you say the state's done interviewed, do you mean police or the...
She's trying to call Nate Eaton as a witness.
Me?
Nate!
Why?
From East Idaho Investigates. He's been covering the case. Like, what are you going to ask Nate? Hey,
Nate wasn't involved in any of this. He just reported on it. What does she think she's going to get?
What did you think of my bikini when you found us at the pool in Hawaii and started questioning us about where our children? Did they look perky or did they? I'm like, what the fuck is she going to ask? What are you going to ask, Nate Eaton? I mean, the only thing I can think of on that, and I don't think she's bright enough on it, is if you call Nate as a witness, then he's not eligible to be in the courtroom during the trial.
Oh, that's an interesting.
At least until after his testimony.
You don't think she's smart enough to be strategizing.
No, I think she literally thinks she's going to find something in Nate's testimony that's going to benefit her. I think in her mind, she's going to she has some questions she's going to throw at him. And it's just going to be, oh, see, look, this proves it's a conspiracy. Like there's something in her mind that she has conjured up. No, I do not think it's that at all.
Wow. Wow. I want to know from Nate. I've chatted with him before I call it Twitter. I don't call it X, but okay, whatever. I'd love to know what he thought when his name came up. Like, what? Excuse me? What?
Call Keith Morrison, too. I'd love to see Keith come on the stand.
Well, you know what? She can't just go down a list of...
No, and this is why this is happening right now.
Yeah.
Where... They can list what they want, but the court has to approve what's going to go through. And if there's,
I'd like Dan Rather.
And if there's no viable reason for calling some of these people, the court's not going to say, oh yeah, you can put them on the list. So it's an attempt. It doesn't mean it's going to work. But I don't think
most of the things she's asked for have been shot down.
But I don't think it's even an attempt, because I don't think she knows what the hell she's doing. So I don't think it's an attempt to shut Nate up from being. And at the end of the day, it's going to be broadcast. So being physically in there, yeah, you do get a couple more perks. You do see some stuff that the cameras are not going to see. So I can't say that you certainly don't have a one up if you're in the courtroom. You do. But yeah, this being broadcast, it's not as significant as it would be if it wasn't. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, it'd be one thing if it were Delphi where, you know, there were not cameras in the courtroom. So you had to rely on the people who were sitting there to get you the news of what's going on. This case, no, no.
So continuing on.
Someone from the prosecutor's office.
In discovery, I have interviews with police on every single one of the witnesses that are on my list.
Okay.
So I know that they had their addresses. I know that we were trying to get the addresses to them in the quickest way possible. And where I am at the jail, the communication is very difficult for me to get a hold of my investigator, to get a hold of my paralegal. I'm 23 hours a day locked down. If I don't have Wi-Fi, I don't have a phone. If I don't have battery, I don't have a phone. I don't have access to get to people. So I understand that. I understand the time constraints, and we're doing the best that we can.
That's why you have answered, a real attorney.
Getting things put right together.
So as a threshold question, your assertion is that all these people that you've listed in your notices have relevant information for trial?
Correct.
And do you know if the police have interviewed these people?
Your Honor, the first listed person is a reporter. So I'm not really sure the relevance of a reporter. He's the only one that hasn't been. So that's what I stated. So, Your Honor, the point is to start with. One, these people, I'm not sure all of them actually have been interviewed. Those that have would have been interviewed 5 years ago. So whether or not their addresses are correct, unclear. It's not the state's responsibility in... for the defendant to do the defendant's work and find these people. I have an absolute right to do interviews just as the defendant does. So in terms of the witnesses, I think that most of them, as best I can guess, would be character evidence, which would be improper under 405. So depending on what they say, then I need to file motions to preclude or motions in limine for any or all of these witnesses.
All right, so it's premature to address these today. The state's going to have to interview
them. Lori's like sitting over there like,
in their opinion, they have relevant information or not.
Smiling. It looks like she's weaving a basket.
As to whether or not they'd be called, I'll have to deal with that as it comes up. But if they're unable to be located or interviewed, obviously they won't be called at trial.
Do you understand this, Lori?
If you want him to do extractions, you're not ready for trial. So in order for him to do the work that he's requesting, getting copies of a laptop or a cell phone or whatever the case may be, that's going to take him time to extract and analyze and then prepare a report. Months, maybe.
I understand that, Your Honor, and I'm hoping he can do it in an expedited manner. I requested him from OPDS on January 14th. He got approved on March 7th.
Well,
from OPDS.
You're the one pressing for your speedy trial, so you kind of have to make a decision on we're set for trial. You want to go to trial or you want to have him do that work that you want? Because I don't think both are going to happen. Even if he got the laptops today, generally those types of things can take weeks, even months, to analyze and prepare a report on.
I understand that. And I also understand that I've only been given 10 hours for him from OPDS, right? So if he could spend 10 hours this week getting them ready, then he can give us a report with the best that he can do.
Well, the report's already late, technically, but if it were allowed, first of all, it's going to take time to coordinate him getting the, let's start here. Specifically, what are you requesting? Because the state wasn't clear whether you were requesting items here impounded by a particular police department or items that may be impounded in Idaho.
Well, I'm sure that my investigator would like to have all of those things done, and I realize that we're on a time constraint, and I would be only concerned with one item, which is at Chandler Police Department, which was Charles, my husband's phone, Charles Vallow's phone.
So she only wants Charles' phone.
Like copy of the extraction that they took from it, the digital forensic extraction from Chandler Police could be given to him immediately. That would be very helpful.
Wasn't that already disclosed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Already has it.
Part of the initial terabyte?
Yes. That's embarrassing.
Excuse me.
Yeah, she looks at him like...
that I have is on a 22 terabyte hard drive. So if I give that away, I can't do my work.
Well, can't you make copies of files out of
22 terabytes?
I understand that. So what's your proposal?
I kind of like that too, where you got, you know, investigator 22 terabytes. Yes, I understand that it's also not 2015. It's not 1998. And I could go to Best Buy right now and I could end up copying 22 terabytes in a couple hours.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be hard. You can get a big hard drive.
You don't know what you're doing.
You put it on a cloud. Like this, it's like, it's not the old days. Like you can copy, it sounds big and scary, but look, there are tools to extract information. There's ways of digging through things and finding files. It's not just like you literally have to read everything. There's ways of searching. There's technology that exists, kids. Unless you are just not, you know, up on any of that, then you're just not a really great investigator anymore. But no, 22 terabytes, you can get it. Yeah, it's not hard. Get it on a high-speed HDMI cable and copy it over. You can do it. I believe in you.
Well, and you can Google how to do this. So
it's called drag and drop.
You're right.
I mean, you're literally talking about data. So it's drag and drop. Move it, move it, move it. It's not hard to do. Yes, it's a large sum. You could put it all up on a cloud. Maybe it is up on a cloud. I mean, there's a lot of ways of doing this that are not impossible. So this dragging the feet of, oh my gosh, 22 terabytes. Like you're really kind of speaking about your inexperience right there. But again, I'm not surprised this person is the, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to rag on the guy, but you are Lori Daybell's investigator. But again, probably not necessarily by choice either.
I'll take it up.
I mean, if you have.
It's a mild inconvenience to have to copy that, honestly.
I'm not saying you have to copy the whole 22 terabytes, but there's a file in there somewhere that's the Cellebrite extraction already for that requested item that's been in defense possession for however long now.
I'll take it up tomorrow.
So I'm happy to make an order, but again, if he's not done with that information you want, are you still wanting to proceed to trial at the end of this month?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
So right there, she literally has an out. She has an out. She has a let's extend this longer. Nope. Wants it done. Okay.
Yeah, this isn't going to end well for her.
Your Honor, I would ask leave that depending on what Mr. Dworkin says,
could still be precluded because depending on what his opinion is, first of all, it's late under the rules of evidence and rules of disclosure. And secondly, depending on what he says, the state would have to have an opportunity to consult with an expert as well.
He's got patience.
So even if he got something done, it could still be precluded, but I'll give him the opportunity to do whatever it is that you think he needs to do to analyze that. But that information's been in defense possession for months, if not over a year.
More than a year, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And he was just approved by OPDS last week, Your Honor.
I thought you said he was approved. You applied in January.
I applied for him in January, and he got last Friday he got approved.
Again, this is one of those things where you have to weigh your options on whether it's worth it to get a continuance.
And he's giving her the option.
Do the work that you want done on your defense. But if you're telling me you don't want to do that.
I would like to do that, but my situation in my housing department precludes me from doing that.
No, it doesn't.
For a continuance?
No, from getting things done in an effective and quick manner.
Okay.
She's such...
All right, well... So you're telling me you don't want a continuance because any information you have at this point could be precluded as being untimely.
I understand that is the rule, and I understand how unfair and prejudicial that would be.
Jesus. Okay. He's being as fair as he can to her.
Yeah, way too fair.
Like, look, I'll give you a continuance. So do you want it?
I'm gonna have to cross the bridge on whether these... notice defense witnesses are even able to be located and interviewed before I make a decision on whether they have relevant information and can be called a trial.
Obviously, Honor, we have a little over a week to try to interview these people, so I will file something at the end of next week indicating who I've been able to reach and interview and ask to preclude everyone else.
All right.
The state prosecution, you can tell it's like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever participated in my life.
Yeah, she's booking a trip to somewhere for spring break because she's going to have most of April.
I'd let her have a cocktail with her and hear her stories.
We did not address last week was the state 609 motion. I presume the defendant will likely testify, so I don't know if we wanted to address that now.
Are you prepared to address that now?
No.
I generally will...
No.
I guess I'll advise the defendant now that if you choose to testify, it's likely that the jury would hear about the convictions. But at your request, they could be sanitized, meaning that they would only hear about...
He's like giving her the cheat codes.
The fact that you have convictions. As opposed to what the nature of the conviction are. But that would be up to you, whether you want that information out or not. And then the jury would receive a limiting instruction that the existence of those convictions is only to be used for the purposes of determining credibility. So you should be aware of that when you make a decision on whether you want to testify or not. Oh, if you do want to testify, it will be question and answer, meaning you need to write out all your questions that you want to be asked and have one of your advisory counsels ask those questions to you when you're on the witness stand.
Can you pause it for a second, Tom? I want to point something out here.
Yeah.
This is above and beyond what should be happening here. And I don't fault the judge. He is being incredibly gracious to her, but he is teaching her how to do what she's doing.
And knowing full well it's going to just sink. But he's doing it. But he's going above and he doesn't have to do any of this.
No, he doesn't.
He really does not. But some judges are kind and have some decorum, and it's like, okay, she does, and it's proper, honestly. If someone's going to choose to represent themselves, yes, it is proper to give a little more guidance, have a little more patience if someone doesn't know what they're doing, assuming they're sane. This is not a sane person. This is not a person who's not grounded in reality. But he's trying to treat her like she is as best as he can without completely rolling her eyes and throwing the gavel across the room to her forehead.
Yeah, he's doing a great job. My God. It's just, it's almost like he's teaching a law class here.
It'd be great if he could have shots on the stand. He's just up there. like, what's that, Laura? You don't want to, okay, hang on. Yeah, another one right now.
Every time she gets snotty to me, I take I slam a shot.
At the time, you sure you don't want it? Like, that'd be really good for you, Lori. Whoa. It'd be really good if you just took a continuance, because I want to go on a vacation too.
He's like spoon feeding it to her, like, wink, wink, this is what you can do. Yep. This is what you should do. Oh, you're not going to do it?
Okay. My housing situation precludes me from, like, from what? From having a continuance? No, from doing the research. Well, it's not what he's talking about, you dipshit.
Oh, God. Wow.
Again, this is why I think states like, I know this is not Idaho, Arizona, New Mexico, and any state that's that still has this area where there's not a insanity defense, it needs to be looked at. The bar needs to be looked at because this is not a competent human being.
Mm-mm.
It is simply not. She's not playing. I know people still think she's playing. Some I don't. I she's nuts. Her brain is not firing correctly. This is a broken person. And at this point, it's almost like a circus. And we're just like poking the monkey that's disabled and mentally challenged and going, yeah, you did this horrible stuff. You lit the kids on fire. Let's keep poking you with sticks. It's like, let's not. Like, let's kind of find some peace somewhere else in life. Put this person in a facility where they're not going to do harm to other people or themselves. And yeah, it's horrible. And everyone would love to see her suffer for the horrible things that she did. And locking her away forever is pretty good. That's suffering. I'm good with that. No chance of parole. Maybe, I mean, I'm fine with prison, whatever it may be, but what are we doing? She's already locked away forever. What are we doing at this point? What are we doing? I don't know. Is this bringing justice? Is this bringing satisfaction? Is this bringing closure to any of the victims' families? I don't know. At this point, we know she's out of her fucking mind. Like, what is this? I don't know. I can't answer that. I'm not the victims. I'm not the victim's family. Maybe if I was there and my loved one was murdered by her and I saw her just, you know, floundering in this, I would get a lot of satisfaction. Maybe I would.
Yeah.
But it's almost getting to the point of like cruel and unusual, quite honestly. Let's keep watching.
The witness stand and just give a narrative. It'll be question and answer.
So am I supposed to reply to the 609? Is that what you're saying? Ask for it to be sanitized if I want that?
We can talk about that when we actually have a 609 hearing.
Sanitized. She probably thinks Lysol.
Yeah, you can make that request orally. You don't have to do a written response. I indicated last time for your opening statement and closing argument and questioning witnesses that you'll pretty much be limited to the podium. Mm-hmm. We'll be in a different courtroom apparently for trial, but it'll be set up very similarly. Either your investigator or one of your advisory counsels will approach witnesses with exhibits if you have to show a witness an exhibit. So I'll have to do the same limitations on the state. The state would be confined pretty much to the area of the podium, and the state would have someone assist in approaching witnesses with exhibits and that sort of thing. All right.
I have some motions that I'd like to file. I had a really hard time getting.
God, she's not done yet.
Legal's very busy. I don't have copies.
I don't have copies.
All right, we'll make copies and give them to the state, and then we'll file them. And depending on what they are, I'll rule on them as the response and replies come in, or we may have to address them depending on what they are. So plan on that questionnaire going out. I think we said next Thursday, the 20th, will be sent out to potential jurors for the first batch of jurors, and then the responses would be cut off on the 27th.
By the way, kids,
will be sent out Monday the 24th, and will end on Monday the 27th.
All right.
As this is airing, that's today.
On the 31st, to go over those remote responses. So that'll be the 31st at 10:30 a.m. Then again, I'll just reiterate, on April 1.
So that's most of it right there. I don't think we need to go anymore. It gets into kind of scheduling details at that point. But the questionnaires are going out as of today to potential jurors. So this is beginning. And yeah, this is going to be a scene. Buckle up. I think they're just going to let her flounder through it. Honestly, I don't think they're going to do anything to stop it. I don't think there's going to be a guardrail. I don't think there's going to be a, you violated this. They're going to be like, stop. They're going to shut her down as quick as they can. and try to stop her from saying stuff. And if she does and it gets to the jury, it's like, don't take that into consideration. You know, that sort of spiel. I think they're just going to try and move this thing through as easily as they can so they don't have to do this again. Because yeah, I don't see any appellate court ever looking at anything here going, oh, yes, you should have a second chance.
Mm-mm. No, I don't see that happening.
I feel like it's the motions.
Yeah. They need to do all of this so that they can say, yeah, we did it. We gave her a fair shake. But she's already circling the drain. I mean, this is just, she has no idea what's going on. And she's about to walk into the lion's den. You don't screw around in a court of law. That's why lawyers exist. That's why you pay them what you pay them. They understand this. They understand the ins and outs of a courtroom and decorum and how to do this job. She has no clue. None.
It's already abundantly clear. Like I said,
that judge has been above and beyond kind and generous to her. She's about to get swallowed up.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Lori Vallow Daybell isn't just standing trial, she's taking center stage at her own defense, as her own defense attorney, in a case where she's accused of conspiring to kill her husband. Now, most of us can barely get through a tax return without asking for help, and here she is prepping cross-examination in shackles. Behind the theatrics is a far more unsettling question. How does someone go from soccer mom to a self-declared prophet to murder defendant and attorney and still seem absolutely convinced that she is the hero of the story? Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining us. Siobhan, when you look at someone like Lori Vallow, whose belief system has led to multiple deaths and who shows no remorse, are we talking about delusion here, a personality disorder, or something even more complex when we're looking at the case of Lori Vallow?
Fortunately, we don't see a whole lot like her, which is a really good thing, because she's a very dangerous combination of someone with a very severe religious delusional disorder. She's grandiose, and she also has a severe personality disorder that preceded the delusional disorder. So she's considered to be narcissistic. She's manipulative, she's histrionic, she loves attention, and she thinks she's the prophetess from God. And when she hooked up with the cult leader, Chad Daybell, we know what happened. Very, very dangerous people.
There's a lot of people who still believe that she is just really extremely manipulative and will do whatever she needs to get her way. Obviously, that is part of her makeup. That seems to be what she's, you know, doing. And we saw it in the Dateline interview. We've seen it when she's talked to her son, Colby Ryan, always trying to get people to believe their perspective or her perspective on everything or her narrative of the story that's changed 50 times. Is that just delusion, or is delusion more so just kind of a symptom of the bigger problem here? And is she even aware of the manipulation in combination with the delusion? Is it the manipulation? Yeah. Is that just, that's just life for Lori?
Yeah, I think the manipulation is something that just comes natural to her. She certainly used her beauty throughout the course of her life since she was a young girl to get her way. She has the ability to make people feel special. She can be very warm. She can be funny. So she's highly manipulative, but she's also delusional, and that makes her crazy and dangerous.
With her and Chad, was that an example of the shared psychosis where the two are believing these sort of things? Or and with shared psychosis, do both have to be on the same level of being a psychopath at that moment in time? Yeah. Can one be way up here and one be like, I'm doing some pretty, like, kind of there, but can also, you know, get off that scale and then not be there anymore while the other still rides it high.
Yeah. Yeah. The psychosis is shared, which is another thing that's really rare. But when these two met each other, it was sort of like, you know, propane and a match, and they just both really amplified. And it's possible to look at psychosis on a continuum, and you can say that some people are a little psychotic some of the time, and some of the people are a lot psychotic most of the time. And I think with Lori, extreme psychosis, she fully believes everything that she says. I mean, that is her reality, and I don't think she can be talked out of it. I do wonder about Chad, not having met him, I can't say for sure, but he seems to me at times to believe his own BS, but perhaps to have a little bit more grounding in reality. At least he knows when to shut up about it, and Lori doesn't.
Why are people like Lori, why is she so good at manipulating others, or why was she so good at manipulating others?
It's a really good question. And what about her background, maybe her role in the family had something to do with how she always got her way? I mean, she was on television game shows and beauty contests, and this was just someone who was really good at getting through in the world, getting by in the world. She found men who were fairly well off who would marry her and support her while she worked as a hairstylist, you know, so she wasn't a tremendously accomplished or talented person in any way, not to knock hairstylists. Mm-hmm. But she really found her way in life through attaching to men that she could manipulate.
And that's an interesting part, because it seems once Charles Vallow, and that's another person who this is trial is all about, that and the Brandon Boudreau and the you know, the accusations of attempted murder there. But obviously, Charles is the dead one here in this story. She gets back the morning that he's killed or dies. He was killed. Alex Cox went in there and killed him, claiming it was self-defense. She shows up smiling, laughing. She's being interviewed. It was chilling. Even if you're on the outs with your ex or whatever, and they certainly were, he was calling her out. He was telling police she's lost her mind. She's in this bizarre religious state, and she's not coming out of it. When you have something like that, what's going on in her mind when she maybe got that information? Did she already probably know it was going to happen? Did she already deal with it, or was there nothing to deal with? Was it just, how do we control the narrative because there's no empathy going on there?
Yeah, I think she really is a person who's able to, once she has a story, fully believe her story. And in her mind, Charles was dark. What was the name they had for him? Ned, somebody that was a demon.
I always want to say Ned Ryerson, but that's Groundhog's Day. But it's Ned something. Yes.
Ned something. Yeah. And Ned needed to die. And and she was able to witness all this. And yeah, that complete disconnection from having any kind of empathic response to this man that you raised your kids with, right? And then go on and talk with the law enforcement officers in a way that was completely charming, you could say beguiling, you know, with able to paint herself as a victim and be convincing about it.
How does someone like Lori, or anyone who like suddenly has this idea that someone is a dark spirit. We started to kind of see that over with Ruby Frankie. Thank God those kids were rescued. But what goes on in one's mind to be, you know, pretzeled in such a way that they can believe another person is a demon, or they're dark, or they need to die? Is that a suggestion from someone? Is that a delusion where they're in their religious, you know, whatever fervor, and they're praying and having a conversation with God or whatever, and that comes to them through a vision? Is it a combination? Like, how do they get there? How do they get the information in their head that, yes, this person who was the father of your kids or the stepfather and was there and you had all these good times together, but now they're dark, they're evil, and they must die. That seems a bit extreme, unless, you know, they're thinking about this about a lot of people, too.
Right. It probably is a lot of people. And I do think you nailed it with it does at least originally come out of a black and white religious system mm-hmm. where there is talk of an enemy, whether it's a political enemy, a person of a different race, or just somebody who doesn't think exactly like us, they belong to Satan. Mm-hmm. And when you have people that are not very well grounded psychologically, they can take that kind of thinking and start applying it all over the place, which is pretty scary.
I've seen that in some of the more extreme cases, the term the enemy being used a lot, yes. not just like the yes. devil or Satan or this or
yes.
the ones that seem to go far with their ideology use that the enemy term.
Yes.
Is
yes.
that accurate and why?
100% accurate. And this gets into some really fascinating stuff about the human mind and human development with our tendency to form in-groups and out-groups. And we're sort of hardwired to have empathy and compassion for people that we perceive to be like us mm-hmm. and to dislike people that we see as different from us. And so that's just a human quality. You know, we may like Americans more than people from foreign countries, or we like black people more than white people, or white people more than black people. You know, so we sort of form these in-groups and out-groups, but it can be taken to a sick extreme. And we see a lot of polarization now, certainly in our political system, in our government, where people are truly becoming polarized to such an extreme degree that everybody who is not exactly like them is part of the enemy. Mm-hmm. And when you mix religion in with that, it's like the enemy becomes satanic. And yeah. then it's okay to kill those people. Mm-hmm. Because culture teaches us who the in-group is and who the out-group is and who it's okay to kill. And that's, I think, what you see taken to an extreme with the Daybells.
It's interesting with folks like that because it's not just, oh, there's the devil. And then if you're going to go with some religious ideology, you know, light religion, or just, I guess, some of the more common ones, it's like, that's over there. And you can be a sinner and you can, you know, we all do bad things and that. But with some of these extreme ones, it's, you're not just influenced and you're doing bad things. You are part of the complex of the devil, basically, when you are the enemy. And they can use it on like anything. Yes. It's like, that's the enemy. Like anything bad happens, like it's a thunderstorm and lightning hit your house, it's the enemy.
100%.
You know, somebody, you know, disagreeing, or like, you know, you not getting the sale at Costco, that's the enemy. It can be the lightest, most ridiculous things to like everything. And the enemy seems to like explain away to them anything that opposes their narrative. Is that accurate?
100%. 100%. You nailed it. It's a really dangerous way of thinking. It's a childish way of thinking, but we see a lot of it. And mm-hmm. yes, people who have a bad day, something goes wrong, their package gets delivered to the wrong address. Oh, it was the enemy yes. doing all this to me. It's really nutty.
So the advice, if you're with someone that's using the term the enemy on a regular basis, is it run for your life?
run fast.
Yeah. Oh, I ran fast. Thank God. Thank God. Because I heard that term a lot from an ex. And that's spooky.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.